chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm thrilled to have Shane Jackson on the show today. Shane is the president of Jackson Healthcare and author of the book, Fostering Culture, A Leader's Guide to Purposefully Shaping Culture. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. So Shane, I am so delighted that we could make this work today. Thank you so much for agreeing to be on the Something Extra podcast.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. Great to be here.
It's going to be fun. We're going to have fun. You and I originally met. We were just trying to think back, and we're not sure if it was Arizona or Florida, but you were involved in Christian Fellowship Network with NYPO, as are we. And that's how we initially met many years ago.
It's been a while. More years probably than either one of us wants to admit, but yeah.
But we still look the same, don't you think?
Yeah, you do. I got a little more gray hair than I did back then.
Well, we are going to have so much fun, and there is just so much that I want to talk about, but I would love for you just to talk a little bit about how you grew up, and I want you to specifically tell me a little bit about your dad.
Well, yeah, I grew up here in Atlanta, one of the few people in Atlanta from Atlanta, but I had a wonderful childhood and, you know, the oldest of three, but my father, as you mentioned, had a very different childhood than I did. He never knew his father. His mother was an alcoholic, and so she couldn't hold a job. She was a waitress most of the time, but because of her addiction, she would lose jobs and, you know, and that sort of thing. And so he really grew up living in the slums, frankly, of Atlanta from one place to another, and, you know, went to multiple different schools and, you know, just really a bad situation that ultimately ended with him going into the foster care system and, you know, lived in a group home, you know, a couple of different foster families and that sort of thing. And ultimately got placed into a foster family with the people that I consider growing up to be my grandparents. And, you know, those people really changed the course of his life and certainly my life and my brother and sister. And he was an entrepreneur. So, you know, experienced all the ups and downs of entrepreneurism, of things working and things not working. And so, you know, we experienced some of that as kids and, you know, kind of up and down. But, you know, when I was born, we lived in a trailer, and his drive, hard work and dedication and a lot of other people, you know, coming in and intersecting in his life and our lives, you know, it totally changed the trajectory of our family. But, you know, I do tell people, like, it's important, I think, kind of understand his background and story, because that experience of him caused him to develop some of the kind of values and beliefs that he had that were then transferred to us as kids. And those very same things are actually the things that drive our business today.
Absolutely. Yes. And I know you have done a lot of self-reflection yourself on values and beliefs, and, you know, and then your culture is born from those, right? But you kind of have to, as a leader, I always say sometimes you have to schedule meetings with yourself, you know, to really rumble and introspect and say, what do I value?
Yeah. And I really like what you said there about scheduling a meeting with yourself, and I actually may steal that phrase from you, you know, because one of the things I like to help kind of leaders understand is that, you know, your values, they drive the decisions that we make and therefore the culture that's in our group, our team, or whatever. But the problem is most of us are unaware of what they are, right? These are unconscious decisions and things that we have, you know. And so one of the things that I really like to communicate to leaders is just taking the time to think deeply enough about what these things really are so that you can analyze where in your life you're acting in accordance with them, where in your life that you're not, so that you can be consciously purposeful about how you're applying your values to your business, to your life, to your family, and that sort of thing. Because when you have that awareness, when you have that purposefulness in your actions, it enables you to really do some amazing things. And I think that's worthwhile. But it, to your point, it starts with sitting down and going, I need to actually think about this, right? And being honest.
And sometimes it's nice to have some sounding boards too. I mean, I process a lot of things out loud, and that might involve getting a spiritual coach or an executive coach involved. Obviously your spouse. My husband is my greatest sounding board, right? But have somebody in your life that you can express those things to, and they will help you with the clarity. So Jackson Healthcare, your dad founded it in 2000, and you guys have been incredibly successful. You have, I think you're one of the third largest healthcare staffing companies in the nation, which is just incredible to think that you just started that in 2000 and you guys have already had that kind of success. I think you've got over 1,500 associates, 7,500 clinicians. You're in all 50 states. You're serving over 10 million patients. It's amazing. So I want you to start with this question. You said somebody asked you the question. Can you tell us a little bit about the culture at Jackson Healthcare?
Well, yeah. And so let me give you a little context on this. So my father started our company in 2000, and I actually at the time was just finishing graduate school, did an MBA, and had another job lined up. And he came to me and said, hey, you know, I got this idea I want to do, and, you know, do you want to come help me do it? And so I did. And so I, you know, I worked several years as we were starting this, kind of doing different things around the company. I was pretty young when we started. Ultimately, we ended up running our largest business line. But then in, I think it was 2014, he came to me and said, I want to do the things I want to do, not the things I have to do in the job. And so that's when he asked me to step into the president role, you know, taking over day-to-day management of the company. So, but at this time, like we were winning all these best places to work awards. And as you said, the company was just growing like crazy. And like culture was something we actually talked about. Like, you know, I used to hear from people all the time, they'd come in for an interview and they're like, I can just feel the culture of this place. Like when I walk in, and we would talk about the fact that culture was a big part of our success. And so this was in 2014, I just moved into this president role and I was giving a speech. And after the speech, I was taking questions and somebody asked me this question, like, oh, you guys, you know, it's such a great place to work and won all these awards. Like, can you tell me about the culture at your company? And like, this should have been the ultimate softball, right? And I like froze up. It was actually kind of embarrassing, frankly, because I, you know, consider myself fairly well spoken. I talk on most topics and I'm like, I actually don't know how to answer that question, you know, and I came up with something and I probably talked about the ping pong table and the, you know, what I mean, I don't know. I came up with something, right? But it made me realize that culture is one of the things, I think for a lot of people, it's like you kind of feel like you understand it, like you kind of get it, but when pressed, like don't actually know what it is. Like I can't actually explain it to you, much less how it works. And so this caused for me, frankly, a little bit of panic because I was moving into this role, taking a responsibility for this business that was growing like crazy. And, you know, I had kind of this intuitive understanding that a lot of our culture was connected to my father, right? And if you're in a founder-run business or, you know, with a strong leader, like you get this, like leaders have an outsized impact on culture. And so I kind of got that, but I was like, whoa, okay. So, you know, we've kind of gotten to the point now where not only will our leaders not have the opportunity to be around my dad to learn, you know, whatever it is he's doing that helped his culture, like a lot of them won't even ever meet. And so that was what caused me to say, like, I've got to understand this, because if we're going to continue to succeed, and if we really believe that our culture is part of our secret sauce here, I got to understand what it is. So I'm going to understand the levers I have as a leader to make sure that it sustains. And so that's what kind of started this journey that ultimately led to the book.
My guess would be that there are business owners, there are leaders out there right now. They're saying, wow, this so resonates with me. I'm there. I got to be able to explain it too. How did you start on this journey? What's the first thing you did?
I just started reading books. I mean, you know, I'm like, all right, there's a book out there. Someone can explain this. And so I books, I did a lot of those, you know, kind of executive summary things that you get. And, you know, and so what I found, at least back then, was that there was a lot of books that talked about culture, but every one of them presupposed that you already understood what culture was, right? So it was like, all right, here's how to have an innovative culture, a winning culture, or a quality culture, whatever. But they just assumed that you already knew what culture was. Nobody like kind of that I could find at that time really like walked, all right, what is culture? Like what actually kind of drives it? I actually did find one book, but it was a textbook. It was literally a college textbook somewhere. And it was super dry. And I was like, this is it. Yeah. You know? And so I did not start on this journey intending to write a book, but I did so because I was like, I can't find anything that explains this, at least in a way that, you know, that I can understand it. And I think that's going to be the same for others. And so that's why I just kind of started doing a lot of work, a lot of research, a lot of thought on trying to put them all together on this.
Did you ever read Change the Culture, Change the Game?
Yeah, I think so. That one's been out for a little bit. Yeah.
That's one of Greg's all-time favorites on culture.
Okay.
But yeah, I want to talk about your values. You've only got three values, but there's a lot of layers to each of those. The first one is others first.
Yeah.
I was a big Zig Ziglar fan. Goodness gracious. I remember when our kids were growing up, I read so many of his books about positivity and this sort of thing. But one of his famous quotes is, you will get all you want in life if you help enough other people get what they want.
Yeah, that's a favorite one. And, you know, I'll admit to back in the day, listening to Zig Ziglar books on cassette tape in my car, driving back and forth to work back when they were active.
Yes.
Cassette tapes, you know. And, you know, of course, Zig Ziglar is very known for training salespeople. So part of the context of that quote is like, look, as a salesperson, figure out what your customer really needs. Like, and if you can solve problems for your customer, then you'll do your job as a salesperson. But start there, not the other way around. Like, the way most people think of sales is like, I've got this product and I'm going to convince you to do it, whether or not you need it or not. Right. And he thought about it the opposite way. And so part of the reason I like that is because when you talk about something like others first, thinking of others for yourself, it evokes this kind of real soft and mushy feeling that it's like, oh, this is kind of a relationship thing. And it's just how we treat each other and whatever. And all that is true, but it's so much more than that. And so for us, this is our first value on the list. And it's there for a reason, because this is not only how you treat each other in a friendship or relationship, whatever. This is our business strategy, right? Because, you know, Zig Ziglar says, like, if we can really, truly understand our customers, what the problems that they have are, and look to serve and provide value for them and start there, by the way, like, that really helps grow your business, right? Versus the other way around. And so this is one of the things I like to talk about internally a lot is, guys, this is not just how we talk to each other. It impacts everything. It impacts the way we manage, the way it impacts the way we do reviews. It impacts the way we do marketing, the way we do sales, the way we do operations, like all of it. It's all about, what does the other person need? You know, how can I serve them? And then if I can figure that out, then we're going to create value for us as well.
And you've already mentioned it, but the golden rule is in there, esteeming the team. You've got another quote, Ronald Reagan, there is no limit to what a man can do or where he can go if he doesn't mind who gets the credit.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful quote too, isn't it? I don't know if that's actually attributed to him, but he had that on his desk.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so,
I'm not sure that he's the one that coined that, but it's just so good. And esteeming the team is all about, it's the team that you have around you. It's a team award is what I say, you know?
Totally.
So much good stuff there, but we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Shane Jackson.
Are you a rising IT leader? Could you benefit from a network of like-minded peers? Let me introduce you to the St. Louis Technology Leadership Experience. This one-of-a-kind program gathers cohorts of IT professionals for three workshops: peer small group problem solving, one-on-one mentoring by IT executives, and multiple networking events. You will be prepared for your next steps as an IT leader by gaining core leadership competencies and a strong, powerful network of peers. To apply for our next TechLX cohort, visit tpi.co/TLX.
So welcome back to the Something Extra podcast with Shane Jackson. So Shane, I want to read something from your book and then allow you to comment on it. You say, I occasionally get a question from the people who are coming into the organization about what they need to do to be successful in our company. This is the answer I give them every time. Don't worry about seeking credit for your success. If you are productive in our company, I guarantee you that you will be noticed. You will succeed here if you can make the team successful.
And that's true. And I can't even count now the number of times I've had that conversation. You know, one of our leaders likes to say that our business is a team sport. There's literally not a single person in our company that can generate revenue, deliver service by themselves. Everything we do involves multiple people. And so there's a few aspects to this, but one of them is that when we do get somebody in who is looking to get noticed, looking to get credit and all that sort of thing, it actually seriously backfires on them. Because if it takes a team, you know, you get the one person on the team is trying to take the credit and whatever, like it destroys trust and all those sorts of things. And so it's one of the things I like to tell people, like, if you want to fail here, this is what you should do. Like, you know, trying to go get credit and all that.
Right.
But the other thing, it also reflects a reality that every business leader knows. You can't possibly have enough good leaders in your organization. I can't remember a time in the last 21 years. It's like, I just got so many great leaders. I don't know what to do with them all, right? Again, in our organization, if you want to have more responsibility, be a leader, that sort of thing, it means the way you're going to be judged for your success is how you deliver through other people, right? And so that's one of the core attributes we're looking for, you know, for people who want to take on more responsibility and rise to the organization, that sort of thing, is show me how well you can get results through other people, which means you've got to empower them. You've got to give credit to them and all that sort of thing. And that's the thing. I'm like, look, you don't have to tell us that, like, you're the one that put the report together. We know, like, we can see it, but that's the skill that we got to find.
So good. Well, your second value is do the wise thing. You know, it's different. You see, do the right thing, but wisdom is a little bit different. I mean, what's your definition of wisdom? And then I know that you've got a story that I think is so good about kind of demonstrating wisdom and how our values, again, going back to our values and what we put value on, will determine the decisions that we make in situations.
The problem that I've had as I've gotten older is that it feels like I'm faced with fewer challenges, decisions that are clear cut right and wrong, you know, and hopefully when I am, like, those are easier decisions, right? But the more responsibility you get, the older you get, the more you see that there's just so much gray. And it's all, sometimes you're making a decision between bad and worse, you know, and sometimes you're making a decision, you know, I mean, I just found of asking myself the question, what's the right thing to do here, was often not that helpful. Because what I didn't need to do is the right thing. It was like, okay, but what's the wise thing? And I like using the word wisdom up here because, to your point, it's not a word that you hear in business very much. But I think it's an incredibly powerful concept. My definition of wisdom is the discernment to determine the best methods to achieve the best objectives. In other words, it takes wisdom to know what's worth pursuing and how to get there. One of the things I love about the concept of wisdom is that it necessarily implies long-term thinking, right? You've never looked at someone and be like, wow, they just did that. I'm sure that felt good in the moment, but boy, are they going to live to regret it. What a wise person, right? You've never heard that, right? Because
right.
Wisdom like implies thinking about ramifications to multiple stakeholders, you know, lots of people, not just yourself, and over a long period of time. That was a concept that we wanted embedded in our company of helping people think. First of all, we want, when you're faced with a decision, to think about this, not just like, what's going to help me today? What's going to help me get a commission today, make this sale today, make this get off my desk today? What's the thing that 3 years from now I'm going to wish I had done? And it creates a totally different view of your business, relationship with your customers, relationship with your team, and all that sort of thing. And so, yeah, the story that you alluded to, I just tell briefly, I love backpacking and hiking. And ever since my kids were young, you know, when they were 8, each of them got a backpack. And so we would go up in the North Georgia mountains and hike around and all that. And I just loved doing it. And my oldest son, when he was 10, we went on this backpacking trip and we got lost. or just following a trail, but whatever, we got, you know, we got lost, and we had kind of gotten up there a little later than we had planned on, and it was getting really cold. I mean, it was, you know, getting down into the close to the single digits, and we had the gear for it, but it's all of a sudden we're lost, don't know where we are, the sun's starting to set, and it's like, what do we do? And I tell this story in the book because it's just kind of this example of like, there's no right thing to do there. But this is not a choice of right or wrong. What do we do? And so, you know, we had a few options. Like, we could try to backtrack where we had gone, go back to the car. You know, I kind of figured out where I thought we got off. But if we went all the way back and then cut up the trail, we'd be getting there after dark. And then I was worried about the cold and us being able to get set up and that sort of thing. Or we could kind of cut through the trails and, you know, try to get to camp before it got dark. But then we risk getting lost even more, or, you right. know, injury and not being on the trail and all that sort of thing. And so what are your choices? What do you do, right? And you're sitting there thinking about, like, okay, first of all, I got to keep my 10-year-old safe, right? I don't want to do something that's going to be dangerous, you know, but I'm also teaching him in this. Part of the reason I like to do this is, like, when you go in the woods, stuff happens and you got to figure out how to deal with it, right? There's problem solving, overcoming adversity, resiliency, like all this I'm trying to do. What's the right thing to do? Well, there's no right or wrong. It's what's the wise thing to do. Like, and that was this, I remember standing in the woods, like at this point of going, do I turn around? Do I go this way? What do I do? And I asked myself the question, 10 years from now, what am I going to wish I did? Every parent gets this.
Yes.
Right. But it applies to our businesses as well.
Yeah. And you know what, Shane, your son probably still talks about that time. It was probably a defining moment for him.
Oh yeah. Hey, we talk about it all the time. And in fact, you know how on your phone you get the, here's a memory or whatever, like literally last week, a picture of that popped up and I was like, hey, and he's like, oh my gosh, that was the coldest trip. And we're, you know, I mean, we're just reliving it.
But he remembers those principles, you know, that you taught him. And, you know, and so sometimes the wisest thing to do is not always the easiest thing either. Your last value, which you and I both talked about, and we're both big growth mindset people, is growth.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when we talk about growth, the distinction we make is we say we want to keep getting better versus keep getting bigger, right? When people think about growth, we're going to grow the top line, we're going to grow, you know, whatever. What we're saying is that we want to keep getting better in everything that we do. Now, I think if you keep getting better, you will keep getting bigger, but it's got to start there, because if it's just, oh, we got to keep getting bigger, then that can lead to some decisions that you'll regret long term, right? First of all, I just think that we have a responsibility as stewards over the assets that we have, the skills that we have, the people that we get to direct, and, you know, and that sort of thing. I mean, that's a huge responsibility, and we are going to be held accountable for what we do with it. How, you know, it's like managing an investment, right? You know, if you don't get a return for your investors, they're going to move their money elsewhere, right? Well, we all have these assets that we manage, and we're held responsible for that. And I think that is true of ourselves, that we continually, you know, need to be thinking through, working on how do we get better at all this. And that's relationships and everything else. And by the way, I would say again, this is a great thing for your business. Right. If you're continually seeking to get better at everything you do and solving real problems for your customers over long periods of time, I mean, frankly, that's right there. That's the secret.
Oh, my head is spinning, Shane. I could talk about so many more things that we could dig in, but I really want you to tell me just a little bit, because I think this is so cool. The Go Beyond Profits. Tell me a little bit. I think that is so cool what you're doing there. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah. So a lot of this goes back to kind of what I was just talking about around kind of our responsibility as leaders. And so Go Beyond Profit is an initiative that we launched to recognize and challenge businesses to think about, and who think about, their business beyond just the profit that they generate. And the concept of this is, first of all, I would say, I believe that businesses are one of the largest, most powerful forces for good in the world. The free market system is the most moral system. You know, in the free market system, they voluntarily enter into transactions, which means if you're voluntarily doing it, you're only doing it if you get something good out of it, right? So it's based on something moral. But, you know, we as businesses, entrepreneurs and all that, we create value for people. We provide jobs for people. We provide so many things for people. I think it's a force for good. And we have a responsibility to generate profits doing it, to our investors, to our associates, you know, to everything else. And by the way, if you don't generate profit, you don't get to do anything else, right? Because you're
right.
However, that said, as a business leader engaged in this incredibly important, powerful process, we believe that with some purpose and consciousness, that there's so much more that you could do. You know, and as a leader, you have such an enormous amount of influence. And the question is, what can you do with that influence that's even above and beyond what the good that the profits that you are that generate and that sort of thing? And there's so many great businesses and business leaders who are doing, you know, just amazing things, I think, on this. And so Go Beyond Profit was something we started to say, like, first of all, we want to draw some attention to this, but we want to put challenges out there to other businesses to think about this and you know, how they incorporate going beyond in their business. And so Love Lifts is kind of our internal program within our company, what we call it, a community involvement, where we really try to activate our business and doing a lot of things. So
if people want to know about Go Beyond Profits, is there a website that they could go to?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's gobeyondprofit.org.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
Google Go Beyond Profit, I'm sure.
Yeah, you guys are creating a movement there, which is just amazing. So Shane, this is called Something Extra. So the question I want to ask you is, what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
So I would say authenticity. I had this conversation actually just recently with one of our business leaders, and they were talking about the pressure that they feel to always have the answer, right? Like you show up in a meeting or you whatever, and especially if you're like the one in charge, people expect you to have an informed opinion on everything. And the danger of that is that if you don't and you kind of pretend that you do, then, you know, we're making decisions on false information and that sort of thing. And so, you know, I think authenticity as a leader is important for a lot of reasons, but one of the most important is that it gives people the permission to not be perfect when they know you're not perfect, right? You know, if you're in a room and you hear the CEO go, you know, I don't know what to do here, or I don't think I know enough about this for us to make a decision yet or whatever, then all of a sudden everyone else goes like, oh, okay, then I guess it's okay that I sometimes don't know what to do either.
Right. Yeah.
And I think it makes you real. It makes you more relatable. And it allows people to kind of open up so you can have more real conversations and make better decisions. So yeah, that's something extra I would say is authenticity.
I love it. I could not agree with you more on that. I love that. So Shane, we've already talked about so many things, but if there's something that's coming up for you that you want to talk about, or how our listeners could get your book, whatever it is, you know, and how our listeners can get involved, I'd love for you to have that opportunity to talk about it.
Yeah. Well, so first thing, find the book on Amazon. Go purchase one, read it, and download it on Kindle or whatever. All the profits go to a ministry that provides health care in Honduras. That's very near and dear to my heart. So if for no other reason, just go do it. Send them a couple bucks. The other thing I would say is follow me on LinkedIn. So I post monthly or so on LinkedIn with kind of things I'm thinking about and writing, and actually got some content that we're thinking about making into a new book. And so starting to kind of test some of that on LinkedIn so you can see some of the stuff that's coming there. But yeah, I'd love to have everybody follow me there.
Connect. Awesome. Well, hey, Shane, thank you so much.
Yeah.
This has just been such a rich conversation. So thank you for making the time to be on the show.
Thanks for the invitation. It's great seeing you again, by the way.
All right. Have a great day.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.